It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station broadcasting here in Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 73 degrees here at the station. That comes close to our all-time record high of 76 set in 2004. Out of the airport, it's 70 degrees where they have northwest winds to 10 miles per hour, gusting to 15. 51% humidity and 10 miles of visibility. Look for mostly sunny skies today with a high near 66, which we just went right by. Mostly cloudy tonight with a low of 55, increasing clouds tomorrow, high near 62, and rain is likely late at night Thursday. Coming up on the Midday Report, Kirsten Dobroth talks to congressional candidate Mary Peltola. In the month of June, six people died outside in Anchorage. And U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan is in favor of Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Biden's issuing a second executive order that counters the recent U.S. Supreme Court ruling that ended nationwide access to abortions. Today's order makes it easier for women to travel between states to terminate their pregnancies. One directive allows states where abortion is still legal to apply for certain Medicaid waivers to help treat patients arriving from out of state. In announcing his latest action, Biden praised voters in the traditionally conservative state of Kansas who went to the polls in large numbers yesterday and rejected a GOP-backed effort to remove abortion protections from the state's constitution.
The voters of Kansas sent a powerful signal that this fall the American people will vote to preserve and protect the right and refuse to let them be ripped away by politicians. And my administration has their back.
Biden signed the order from the White House residence where he's still self-isolating with a rebound case of COVID-19. Just months before voters nationwide determined key races, including those that will affect the makeup of Congress, state and local officials say they're worried about the threats election workers are facing. NPR's Ryan Lucas reports lawmakers heard from some election officials today.
One of the election officials testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee was Michigan Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson.
We cannot have a secure democracy if we do not protect the security of the people who administer our elections. And right now, we are facing an unprecedented wave of continuous, unrelenting harassment and threats.
Benson says protesters descended on her home in December 2020 with bullhorns and shouted obscenities and threats. The Justice Department says it has reviewed around 1,000 threatening communications made to election officials. More than 100 of those have been deemed potentially unlawful. The department has dozens of ongoing investigations and has filed charges in five cases so far. Ryan Lucas, NPR News, Washington.
In an Austin courtroom today, conspiracy theorist Alex Jones admitted that the Sandy Hook school shooting, the deadliest in U.S. history, was, quote, 100% real. NPR's John Burnett reports the parents of one of the children killed are suing Jones.
Jones' attorney asked his client in court if he now understands that it was absolutely irresponsible to broadcast on his InfoWars platform that the Sandy Hook shooting was a hoax staged by the federal government. Jones agreed and said he later conceded the massacre did happen. His defense is that the First Amendment allows him to question not just the facts of Sandy Hook, but other newsworthy events from the September 11 attacks to the moon landing. But parents of a six-year-old killed at the Connecticut Elementary School testified that they've been hounded by deranged InfoWars followers, subjected to death threats, online harassment, and shots fired at their homes. They're seeking up to $150 million in damages. John Burnett, NPR News, Austin.
From Washington, this is NPR News.
Ang NPR Balita ay hatid sa inyo ng Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. Para sa kaukulang impormasyon tungkol sa aming mga serbisyo, tumawag lamang sa 481-2400.
Mary Peltola made a campaign stop in Kodiak over the weekend. Peltola is the Democratic candidate in the special election for Alaska's lone U.S. House seat, previously held by Representative Don Young. Peltola served in Alaska's state legislature for a decade as Bethel's representative, then as a Bethel City Council member. She's currently the executive director for the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission. Peltola spoke to KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth about why she's running for Congress, abortion rights, and her priorities if she wins the special election on August 16th.
There were about four dozen candidates in the special primary earlier this year. For many voters, it was overwhelming. It was hard to understand where people were coming from, what they stood for. Now that you're one of the three finalists in this last push of campaigning for the House seat, how are you introducing yourself to voters?
My name is Agathok, or Mary Peltola. I'm a Yupik Eskimo from Bethel. I'm from the Kuskokwim River, lifelong Alaskan. I'm the mom of four. I have three stepkids and two grandkids. I have a very vested interest in Alaska, as all Alaskans do. You know, after the dust settled a little bit on the surprise passing of Representative Young, you know, it took me about a week to kind of process that. And like 47 other Alaskans, I thought, well, there are a lot of issues that are very pressing to Alaskans and to Americans, and it just doesn't feel like this is a time to sit it out. And really, one of my big motivations for running for this seat is to elevate the issue of salmon abundance or lack thereof, and the resulting food insecurity that we're really seeing statewide as a result of low abundance. And that low abundance is seen throughout so many species, and not just different salmon species, but we've got critically low abundance of caribou, ptarmigan, Dall sheep. Many of our Alaskan species are in decline, and it is a very big concern for Alaskans across the state. On that issue alone, that was enough reason to run. Certainly, there are many, many, many other issues that we're facing as Alaskans and Americans, and I'm happy to be in the discussion.
Are there any specific bills or pieces of legislation that are currently in D.C. that you would support or start working to help advance if you were elected?
Well, I'm very pleased to see the progress that was made last week in terms of the Inflation Reduction Act. Of course, I would want to codify protections for safe and legal abortion across the United States. I think that that's an important thing. One of the concerns that I have is we are now seeing a Supreme Court that is taking a much different approach. They are more comfortable with overturning precedent. That is something very new. And this is the first time in my life that we've seen the Supreme Court take away freedoms and take away people's rights.
Would you support codifying and passing legislation to protect other rights like gay marriage or access to contraceptives?
Yes, I would support those you know, codification of those rights. And I think protecting those rights is very much in keeping with what Alaskans want. Polls have shown that 60 to 65% of Alaskans are pro-choice. Alaskans very much prize their privacy and liberties, and the decisions that the Supreme Court has made and the direction they're going are very counter to how most Alaskans feel about privacy and freedom. I really just think that our elected officials should be more reflective of their citizenry.
As Alaska moves into this next phase of representation after having Don Young as our congressman for so long, you are running as a Democrat. You clearly bring your own priorities and issues and goals. But if you're elected, are there any specific issues or legislation that the late Congressman Don Young championed that you would work to advance or that you would take up?
everyone, almost to a person that I know, has a story about how Don Young and his office helped them navigate the federal bureaucracy. My own family, we were a commercial fishing family. We had a south wind August storm hit the area of Alaska we were in, and our boats sank, and with it, vacuum packing equipment and different kinds of expensive equipment. And the IRS expected proof of that. Well, everybody in Alaska can recognize, how do you prove that your boat sank? It's sitting on the bottom of the Bering Sea. And so this is one example of Don Young and his staff really coming to the rescue with making it clear to the IRS that that was not a reasonable request. I would love to be the congressman that people can call upon to help them navigate the federal bureaucracy. And I don't have the kind of catalog memory of all the various pieces of legislation that Don Young passed, but certainly one of them was legislation that got the pipeline built. That was, talk about transformational. We had such vast resources when I was growing up. There was municipal assistance and revenue sharing. There was robust state spending and investing, all because Don Young championed that one significant infrastructure project. And I see in the future, we're going to have so many more projects that we need. Right now, I think some of our big infrastructure investment needs are internet throughout the state, reliable internet. Our ports and harbors are a critical piece of Alaska. Our airports. It's just a never-ending list, because we're such a new state and a young state and have such rough terrain. Infrastructure investment is going to be one of the top things for whoever wins this seat.
That was KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth speaking with Mary Peltola, the Democratic candidate in the special election for Alaska's U.S. House seat. KMXT will interview other congressional candidates when they campaign in Kodiak. For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. Six people died outside in Anchorage in June, and their bodies were found in city parks or just off city streets. It's the highest monthly outdoor death count in at least the past 2 years, according to data from the Anchorage Police Department. Advocates and homeless service providers say the increase is likely caused by the rise in the number of homeless campers linked to the city closing the mass shelter at the Sullivan Arena. And as Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan reports, they say the situation could get worse without quick action.
The six people who died outdoors in Anchorage in June include a 56-year-old man who was found lying on the ground at a homeless camp off of 15th Avenue, a woman who was found outside of an abandoned Sam's Club building in South Anchorage, and 47-year-old John Prunes, who was found in the woods by a church on the east side of town.
He was an angel. He would do anything in the world for you. A man would give you the shirt off his back.
Rita Prunes says she doesn't know how her brother-in-law died, but he'd been homeless in Anchorage for years, bouncing around between shelters and outdoor camps. His death on June 26th is part of what homeless advocates and service providers fear is a trend. The six people who died in June in Anchorage represents almost four times the monthly average over the past 2 years. Jessica Parks oversees housing at Rural Cap, which connects people with housing. She attributes the rise in deaths to a rise in homeless people camping outside. It's grim math.
If there are more people who are unsheltered, there are going to be more unsheltered deaths.
Anchorage started turning people away from its largest homeless shelter at the Sullivan Arena in June and closed it at the end of the month. Without shelter space, Parks and other homeless service providers say they saw a sharp increase in homeless people camping outdoors, and they worry that the situation is likely to continue. The city's new planned shelter won't be ready until winter. Meanwhile, the city is waiving fees for homeless people to camp at Centennial Campground. At the same time, some federal rental relief programs are ending, pushing more people into homelessness. Reverend Michael Burke of St. Mary's Episcopal Church has worked closely with people experiencing homelessness for the past two decades. He says this year he's especially concerned about the fall, which he says is often the deadliest time for unsheltered homeless people.
If we don't move pretty quickly on a plan to get people into safe shelter and supported housing, we're going to see more and more deaths in the city.
Tyler Sachsleben, a spokesperson for the city health department, said in an email that the department did not want to speculate on the causes of death of people who recently died outside. He did not respond to questions about whether the department was tracking the increase in outdoor deaths and would make any changes to address it. And he disputed claims that there was an increase in outdoor camping in June, saying it's hard to measure. That goes against what the city's main service agencies have reported. Advocates point to a host of risks to people camping outside in the city, even if it's at Centennial. Lisa Souter directs Beans Cafe, the city's main soup kitchen. She says the ongoing fentanyl epidemic is a big one. At least two of the six people who died in June in Anchorage appeared to have overdosed from multiple drugs, according to the state medical examiner's office. In outdoor camps, Souter says it's harder to administer the overdose-reversing drugs like Narcan or monitor for other emergencies.
It's not just drug overdose. It could be somebody having a seizure because they have epilepsy. It could be somebody having a stroke. It could be somebody having a heart attack.
Rita Prunes says she hopes the city can do more to find shelter for homeless people like her brother-in-law.
I think the city should be able to open more places. There's places up there that are empty, standing empty. They can open it up for them people, for the homeless people.
Service providers agree. They say building more housing and shelter is likely the only way to reduce the number of people who die outside. And they say that to make a difference before winter, the time to act is now. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Lex Trinan.
U.S. Senator Dan Sullivan doesn't usually praise Democratic leaders, but he and 25 other Republican senators issued a statement on Tuesday supporting House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's trip to Taiwan. Pelosi is the highest-ranking American official to visit the self-ruled island in 25 years. China sees foreign leaders' visits to Taiwan as a recognition of the island's sovereignty. China claims Taiwan as part of its territory and announced a series of military operations after Pelosi's arrival. The Republican senator's statement says the U.S. is committed to its One China policy, which recognizes Beijing but allows informal relations and defense ties with Taipei. Sullivan says Pelosi's trip is consistent with that policy.
This is something that we as elected officials do on a regular basis. And at the end of the day, you do not want the Chinese Communist Party dictating to senior American leaders where they can and cannot travel.
China had warned of, quote, resolute and strong measures, close quote, if Pelosi went ahead with the trip. Sullivan says it's important for U.S. officials to unite behind Pelosi on this.
My view, and I think the view of a number of senators, is that we should close ranks now and not let the Chinese Communist Party try to drive wedges between American elected officials or the White House on whether or not she should be there.
Senator Lisa Murkowski also expressed support for the visit. She calls it, quote, an important show of solidarity and partnership between the U.S. and Taiwan at a moment that demands nothing less. A 17-year-old is on a quest to become the youngest person ever to fly solo around the world. He landed in Unalaska on Monday. KUCB's Laurelyn Cruz caught up with him.
How are you, Mac?
Very good.
Welcome to Dutch Harbor.
Thank you very much.
How was the
flight in? Very nice, yeah.
Mac Rutherford is greeted by Port Director for Customs and Border Protection George Dominguez and others at the airport in Unalaska. It's been months and thousands of miles since the young soloist started his journey. He left Bulgaria in late March and made his way across Africa and Asia. Over the past few days, he's flown up the Aleutian chain, from Attu to Shimia to Adak.
It's quite incredible, the views you see, because you see the world from a completely different perspective. From the air, you can really see the general landscape and see how the country is, but in a way that you wouldn't be able to on the ground.
Rutherford is Belgian and British and comes from a family of aviators. He says his sister was his inspiration. She completed her own around-the-world flight earlier this year. Following in her footsteps, Rutherford got his pilot's license at age 15, setting the record for youngest pilot in the world. He has a lot of experience flying for someone his age, but he says there's been a lot to learn on this trip.
It's completely different in many parts of the world, so in Africa, I had quite a few problems with visibility or mountains, things like that. But when I got to India, for example, it was monsoon season, so it was big storms. It's quite interesting how all these different places have different challenges.
The challenge near Unalaska? Flying over the mountains and then dropping down to sea level. Rutherford had to make a second attempt at landing.
I was flying in way too high because to get over the mountains, I had to go to I was at 7,500 feet. And then suddenly I had to descend a huge amount because this is basically at sea level. And so once I tried to do my approach, I was still too high, so I had to go around and try again. And the second time I was able to do it.
From Unalaska, Rutherford is scheduled to stop in Anchorage. From there, he'll fly to Ketchikan and then down the west coast to Mexico. He expects to complete his journey in Bulgaria in late August. In Unalaska, I'm Laurelyn Cruz.
Today's KMXT Local News is brought to you in part by Discover Kodiak, a one-stop source for visitor information on Kodiak and other destinations around the state. On the web at kodiak.org and at the Visitor Center in the Ferry Terminal Building at 100 Marine Way, 486-4782.